welcome to Blue Republican Radio with me, Robin Kerner, the original Blue Republican. It's always good to have you back. We're getting increasing numbers of downloads these days, and it's you guys that are doing that. So thank you very much for supporting Daily Pool Radio and supporting Blue Republican Radio, supporting me. I appreciate it. Now, today I am going to be interviewing a gentleman who lives not too far from me. He and I have the same home state. His name is Bill Stinson. He's running for state representative in the 41st district. Now, that covers Bellevue, basically where anybody who works for Microsoft lives, and Mercer Island. They're the two main population centers that his district would be covering. And the reason that he's a little more interesting, perhaps, than your average state representative candidate is, he is only 20 years old, and were he to succeed in his bid for office, he would become the youngest state representative in the history of Washington State. So, Bill, thanks for being on the show. Welcome.
Thank you, Robin. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
It's good to have you on. You're also the president of the Young Americans for Liberty chapter at the local university, right?
That's right, yeah, at the University of Washington.
Absolutely. So, now, people often talk to me, Bill, about, well, often they're despondent, right? When I'm sometimes in the room speaking to certainly a more mature crowd, there's just this, how do we come back from this? And I tend to be, from this kind of takedown of liberty that we've been experiencing over certainly the last decade, but of course longer. And I tend to be an optimist because I tend to think that we're kind of winning the young. And I sometimes am in rooms with young people who have been educating themselves in the ideas of liberty, you might say the canon of liberty. You know, they're reading Rothbard, they're reading Hayek, whoever it is, you know, whatever is their favorite flavor. They are taking in good ideas of liberty and indeed the American history of liberty that they're not getting taught in school, that they're not getting taught by the mainstream politicians, that the mainstream media certainly aren't telling them about. But, you know, there they are sitting in a room perhaps where I'm speaking, and it gives me hope. Because, of course, if we have the young, if we have the under 30s, if we can begin as people who love liberty to, let's say, dominate the minds of those who are politically active and, let's say, at least anti-establishment, that know there's something wrong with the current prevailing political republicrat paradigm. If those people love liberty, then the future could be pretty good. Now, you are kind of one of those young people that give me hope. In as much as you're 20, you obviously love liberty. You've already been an activist for liberty on your campus, a major campus, and now you're taking a big step. You're running for office, and that takes a lot of work. So give us a little bit of your background, Bill. When did you identify as a liberty person? Like, give us your history a little bit, and then we'll kind of come to the present day and why you decided that you could make this bid for office.
Okay. Well, so I was in a civics and government class my senior year of high school, and that year, the 2012 presidential primaries were going on. There were the Republicans with all their candidates, and Barack Obama, and I knew that Barack Obama was, he was hurting our country. And so I thought, okay, we should replace him with someone who's better and who wants to turn our country around and, you know, get the debt down and all that. And no one out of the whole field of candidates stood out to me except for Ron Paul. What he was saying just made sense, okay? The, you know, freedom and his foreign policy stance and everything, it made a lot of sense to someone who was young and who'd grown up with all this debt being piled on our generation and being constantly in war. So I got involved in his campaign, and I worked in the Washington state headquarters for the Ron Paul presidential campaign, and I met a lot of other young people who were really enthusiastic about his ideas, and that gave me a lot of inspiration, a lot of hope. So after working in his campaign and going through that whole political process through the caucuses in Washington State and being involved with that, I attended the University of Washington, and I kept pursuing the ideas of liberty. And I did that through Young Americans for Liberty, which is an organization that has chapters around the country on college campuses, and through Students for Liberty, which is an international organization that holds conferences and helps distribute resources to different liberty-minded organizations. Mm-hmm. And I just became really involved in those two organizations, and then I decided to run for office.
But what, I mean, what, I want to ask you, I guess, two questions.
Okay.
First, Young Americans for Liberty and Students for Liberty. I've had quite a few dealings with Students for Liberty, but not with Young Americans for Liberty. So I'd be interested in a little compare and contrast. But the other thing I want to ask you is, what was it that you, what was the kind of analysis that you did in deciding to run for office? You know, what was it that you were considering? So let's do the YALSFL first, and then we'll get back to your run.
Okay, so YAL and SFL are partner organizations. They work together in the fact that Young Americans for Liberty has the chapters, they are the clubs, they have the group members on the campuses, and Students for Liberty trains student leaders, which they call campus coordinators, and those campus coordinators help get the resources, the tabling kits, the speakers, and the conferences out to these campuses where the Young Americans for Liberty chapters are.
Okay, but these were originally independent organizations, am I right?
They were, and I think that they found that they were stepping on each other's toes, and they found a way to work together. I'm not completely sure how it took place, but I would assume that that's maybe what happened.
And do you know, is that relationship the same across the country, or does it vary among campuses?
No, it's the same around the country.
Oh, interesting. So they're working increasingly together,
yes.
And you're saying that YAL speaks more to the representation on campus, and SFL is the organization that in many ways is facilitating the work of YAL.
Yeah, you could, yeah.
Okay.
You could say that.
Okay, so now let's get to your run. So you're 20, and I'm trying to think what I was doing when I was 20. I couldn't imagine running for office. And you're studying political science at UW, right?
Right.
And now you must have done a bit of research as to what running for office would entail.
That's right.
So what research did you do, and what was the calculation you made?
Well, a local race, like state representative, is a lot about name ID or name recognition. And the way you do that in these smaller races that aren't at a national level is you just go out and doorbell. Mm. You literally walk through the neighborhood in your district, and you go and you talk to people at their front door, and you ask for their support. You do that, and you raise enough money to have mailers and signs put up, and that's about it. And
now, how many people are in your district?
So in the state of Washington, there are 49 legislative districts, and each one of them has 137,500 people, approximately.
Now, you're not going to meet 137,000 people.
That's right.
So,
but 137,000 people don't all vote.
Right. Well, so that was my next question. What fraction typically vote?
About 60 to 70,000.
Now, but 60, 70,000, that's still a big number, and you don't know where they all are, except that they're dispersed among your decently sized district. So that's walking, right?
We do know where they are because we know where the registered voters are, and our state and our county tells us who votes.
Ah, so you're going back to databases of previous voters. Because you don't just need registered voters. You need registered voters that actually use their vote, right?
Right.
You've got historic data on that, right?
And when they have voted. And so that's actually an interesting – that puts us into an interesting topic, and how databases – are becoming very important in these kind of races at the local level.
Okay.
Not just on national level of campaigns.
Well, we've got only about half a minute left in this segment, but let's start talking about that.
Okay.
Go ahead. So how are you beginning to use databases, and what do you have access to?
Well, we know what people have voted on. We know, you can use phone banking, and you can call people, and you can ask them what their positions are on certain things. That doesn't really seem to work anymore.
Okay, because, you know what? We'll come back later and find out what does.
Sounds good.
Second segment of Blue Republican Radio. I am speaking to a young gentleman called Bill Stinson, who is looking to become the youngest state representative in the history of Washington State. And I have to say, I kind of like his style, because he just messaged me today on Facebook completely out of the blue saying, I want to be on your radio show. So I kind of like his chutzpah, and I really hope, Bill, that that's going to kind of carry you forward in your campaign.
Well, that's what someone needs to run a campaign, I think.
I think you're right. And indeed, we've begun to talk about doorbelling, but we were just talking about the way that you're using databases, right?
Right.
So carry on with your thoughts on database. You were saying what isn't working these days, or no longer works, rather. What is working now?
Well, what's working a lot better now, and I have to kind of preface this with, in politics, technology is always behind. There's a lag there. You know, people aren't able to use technology in politics until about maybe a few years after it comes out. People don't understand how the two connect, right?
Sure.
So what various people have been doing is coming up with ways through phone apps and other ways to put databases in your phone. So you can go around and doorbell and record data in your phone after you talk to someone person to person, and that seems to be a lot more effective.
Right. So basically, we're now bringing technology. This is interesting, because you're kind of combining the old fashioned stuff, you know, the knocking on doors, the pounding the pavement or the sidewalk, as you say here, with technology. Yeah.
You're right.
So now, how many days? I mean, how long have you been? Has it been since you started, Bill?
Well, I decided to run back in January.
Okay.
And I didn't officially start my campaign until around May.
Okay.
And that's when I got my social media up. And there was an article in the UW Daily in April before then. But that was pretty much the first announcement of my campaign.
So say you've been doing this about like 3 weeks or so. How many doors have you knocked on?
I've knocked on about a few over 1,000 doors.
Okay, good for you.
That's not very many, though.
No, it isn't. It's a start. But,
right.
I mean, I when I came to the U.S., like, the first time, I'm not counting when I was, like, you know, 8 and my parents brought me to Disney World. When I came for the first time as an adult, I actually was door-to-door selling.
Okay.
And it was, I'm so glad I did it, because I learned so much, and I use it now in politics, what I learned. But I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, because it can be brutally difficult, right? But what kind of reception are you getting? This 1,000 doors, it's a fair data, kind of sample. It's a decent data set. So what are you finding? You're running as a Republican. You're running as a Republican in a part of well, the environs of Seattle that actually, they're quite moneyed. And so it's, you know, it's not as deep blue as like, you know, the middle of Seattle. It's purple. What kind of a response are you getting? First of all, to your politics, but also secondly, to the fact that there you are as a obviously young man, really young man, stepping up to serve your country in elected office.
Right. And people are, the perception's very positive about that. Usually, the people ask me, what do I stand for? Or they ask me, what party are you from? And if, or when I tell them that I'm a Republican, sometimes, yeah, they get disgusted looks on their face. But when I tell them that I'm socially tolerant and I'm socially liberal, they say, you know, maybe I could vote for a Republican this time. And you're young, and I like that. And so, hey, maybe we will see some Democrats decide to vote Republican instead in this election.
Now, so here's an interesting question. How, to what extent are the people that you meet completely unaware that there is this new socially tolerant, liberty-loving life in the Republican Party?
Oh, most people are completely unaware. Most people in our state are just unaware that there are 49 legislative districts and that each one has two representatives and one senator. Most people are unaware of that. They know that there's a legislature that meets down in Olympia, but most people aren't really clued in on how it all operates and how that works.
Now, so the fact that people are so ignorant, and this isn't to insult anyone, I mean, just, you know, people getting on with their lives, we're all pretty ignorant about most of, you know, what politics means in our communities. Does the fact that people are that ignorant, does that make it easier for you because, you know, you haven't got to, as it were, get them to unlearn stuff they already know? Or does it make it harder because they don't have a clue or they're just not interested?
Well, my goal is to educate them and do that by creating a conversation with them. And this is kind of one of the facets of my campaign, of using social media to connect with the voters and hold a conversation with them and ask them, what issues are you concerned about? What matters about you? I'm running on transportation, education, and the economy. Those are my three main issues, but I want to know what's important to you so that I can represent you when I'm down in Olympia. That's what I want to do. I want them to, I do want them to be more informed.
And what kind of responses do you get to that?
Very positive responses.
How do they answer that question when you say, you know, what matters to you? Is there a majority answer or an answer that you get more than any other?
Oh, no, there's very different answers. I spoke to a woman today who works at the Bellevue Farmers Market.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had to move locations around.
Okay.
And I don't know why that is, but maybe it could be because of property taxes or real estate in our area. And, you know, there are ways that we could make it easier for farmers markets in our area to survive and have locations for them available, because people want what they're selling. People want those local foods and whatnot. Then yeah, that would be something I'd be concerned about too, as the representative.
So when you start to lay out your positions on issues to someone who, let's say, reacted negatively when you said you're a Republican,
okay,
what then tends to happen? What works? What doesn't work? Do you find people open-minded and seriously willing to, as you say, you know, consider you?
Some people, I think some people kind of have a gateway or a gatekeeper issue.
Mm-hmm.
That if you agree with me on this position, then I will listen to you on all of your other positions. Kind of that kind of mindset.
Okay. What kind of issues have been gatekeeper issues that you've been finding there?
Right now it seems like abortion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, we're still in the culture wars.
I know. I know.
So now, so Bill, are you, do you have a simple position on abortion? What's your pitch on abortion?
My position on abortion is that I'm pro-choice. I support a woman's right to choose.
Now, as a Republican, when you say I'm a Republican, then you say I'm pro-choice, people must fall off their seats.
Well, Ben, I do have to remind you that I'm running in the state of Washington and in the Seattle area, which is far more socially tolerant. So, and the people who are Republicans, they're not your typical Bible thumping Republicans from the South. Maybe they're more moderate Republicans who might already be pro-choice.
Wow.
And just want sound fiscal policy in Olympia. So there are different types of Republicans, and you know we shouldn't put the national stereotypes on everyone. Right?
And so the Republicans that you're finding, and we're just coming to the end of this segment, are more like you.
To a degree, yes.
Okay, very interesting, and I guess I'm pleased to hear that since I'm talking to a Liberty guy. Okay, we're going into the next break. Back to Blue Republican Radio for the Liberty Curious. I'm speaking to Bill Stinson. So, Bill, a lot of interesting, great things are going on, I think, in the Liberty movement. There is all this energy among the young. I was speaking at the Libertarian Party of Washington State annual conference last weekend. They have gone from having zero candidates for state office last year to 12 this year. I look over in Britain and I see UKIP that didn't exist 20 years ago, calls itself a libertarian party with a small L, and I interviewed its chairman one or two shows ago, and he said, yeah, we have libertarian instincts, was how he defined it. But there we were, a party with libertarian instincts coming from outside the mainstream, the political mainstream, for the first time in 100 years, more than 100 years, knocking the two main parties off their pedestal and actually beating them into second and third place in a national election. Now, anybody who knows my work knows that I support anybody and any party that's pushing for liberty. I don't care if they're libertarian, Republican, you know, they can even be running Democrat. In fact, I'm looking for some liberty Democrats. They're so hard to find. But I would love to be able to support them and even give them the kind of official blue Republican endorsement. Now, you, however, have decided to make your bid to increase the liberty quotient in Washington State from within the Republican Party. So now, is that a philosophical or a pragmatic decision on the one? You know, that's like the first question. Yeah. Well, let's just answer that question. Yeah.
Yeah, let's jump into that question. That it's both. And the reason I say that is because I am so passionate about the ideas that I want to take a pragmatic approach to seeing those ideas manifest.
Right.
And I think it'll be very interesting to see this election cycle and see whether a libertarian is elected in Washington State Legislature. It could happen. And it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out. But at the same time, for political parties to be successful, they need resources. And when I say that, they need money, because what the money does is it helps you reach your voters through mailers, through advertisements, and all that. And that's what helps gets people elected. Unfortunately, it's not just having the best ideas,
mm-hmm.
because I do think the Libertarian Party does have some of the best ideas.
Mm.
And I think it would be great if the Republican Party took some of their ideas and used them. But that's not what gets people elected, in my opinion.
The ideas don't get people elected?
I think they do, but I think it's more than that. I mean, that's why if having the right ideas got people elected, then Barry Goldwater would have been elected.
Well, indeed. So are you actually yourself seeing, are you getting some financial benefit for your campaign by being a Republican? Are you already seeing that?
Yes. I would not be getting support from certain people who I'm getting it from if I was not a Republican. Because those people, they hold the same ideas that I hold, but they don't support a third party yet. They're still Republicans.
Right. And would you say, let's say if you were kind of among friends, if you were in a closed room with your YAL buddies, would you call yourself a small L libertarian?
I would.
Okay. I mean, I figured as much, but, you know, it's and labels are kind of, you know, they're kind of dirty things. But
absolutely.
But I just to be clear. Okay.
You know,
go ahead.
There's so many different labels we could put on that. I mean, I think a lot of my generation, the millennial generation, a lot of them you could put the small L libertarian label on them. They might not even see themselves as that, but they probably would tell you that they are fiscally conservative and socially liberal. Now, they might vote Democrat. They might vote Republican, but they probably don't. But most of them are independent. And so it's going to be whichever party can come up with the best message that sells to those people who are fiscally conservative and socially liberal. And that's a great opportunity for the Libertarian Party. It's also a great opportunity for the Republican Party, who is or who claims to be fiscally conservative, but has been, I think, held back by trying to use government to instill their social beliefs, it seems like.
Okay. Do you think, given the rise of, I mean, in the independents, you know, non-party affiliated is the biggest block right now of registered voters. You've got Republicans, Democrats, and these independents. And independents, that fraction is rising.
Right.
Does that mean that there's a kind of inevitability about the Republicans becoming more small-L libertarian just out of sheer self-interest, you know, if they want to get elected, which means they've got to get enough of that independent middle and also that independent youth vote that, you know, they have to bring in. Is that going to happen? Are you seeing that? As a millennial, you know, kind of the new energy in the Republican Party, are you seeing a change? Like, what are you experiencing?
Yes, I am seeing that. And a few weeks ago, there was this Republican conference held down in SeaTac called the Cascade Conference, and it focused on social issues and how Republicans need to at least be socially tolerant. You know, even if they're pro-life, because they believe in limited government, they shouldn't be trying to institute their pro-life views through legislation.
Now, hold on. Was that an actual Republican event or a Republican Liberty Caucus event?
No, it was mostly mainstream. It was held by a group called Mainstream Republicans.
Oh, wow. This is interesting.
Yeah.
So that does seem like quite a big shift.
And I believe this was going on during the Libertarian Party in Washington's
I believe it was, because I think I actually have a friend that went from one of those events to the other.
Right.
And I met her at the Libertarian Party conference.
Right.
So okay, so are you saying that this trajectory towards greater social tolerance is already evident? Is it fragile or is it in the bag?
I don't think it's in the bag yet. I think it's happening. I think it's just something that will keep growing. And I think that, you know, as people look more towards the 2016 presidential elections, they're going to understand how big of a role it's going to play, and that both candidates are probably going to need to be socially tolerant.
Both, you mean Republican and Democratic candidates?
And possibly the third Libertarian Party candidate.
But I mean, but surely by 2016, let's say, millennials and those kind of views are not, don't constitute a big enough majority of the opinions of the electorate that they're going to determine, basically require that the Republican nominee is unlike any we've had in a while.
I think that that will depend on the Republican Party. And I think that will depend on whether they decide that they want to be more socially tolerant. Because I hear so many people say, yeah, I'm fiscally conservative, but I don't want to vote Republican.
Yeah.
Because they're not socially tolerant.
Now, do you think that your positive experience, positive from a liberty point of view, of the GOP is really, though, a function of the fact that you are in a very blue state?
I do. Yeah, I think you're right.
So
my candidacy is an anomaly. The fact that I am so young and I'm able to run, it's because our state is very blue and the Republican Party is not as strong. And if I was trying to run in a much more Republican state, I probably wouldn't have gotten my party's backing to run.
Okay, so let me just make sure I'm clear on this. Are you saying that these positive changes towards liberty, I mean, I understood that you were saying they're taking hold in the Republican Party, which implies the National Republican Party.
Right.
But do you think this is really just something going on, you know, in the Republican parties of New England and the Left Coast, where Republicans don't do very well anyway?
Well, the thing is, I think Republicans are realizing that they're going to have to win the Left Coast and those other areas if they want to be able to win on the national stage.
Right. I mean, this is Rand Paul's
point. It might be.
I mean, this is what Rand Paul is saying increasingly.
Right.
And it does look like that he's right on that. I mean, I don't see any way around it. But now, you know, I have some information from other quarters, as it were, in the Republican Party, even up here in deepest blue Washington State, that actually they're almost doubling down on their anti-liberty, you know, what they did to Ron Paul, you know, all of that. There's a Carter in the Republican Party that wants to kind of double down on that and work even harder to keep out this new, young, small-L libertarian energy in the Republican Party. Have you not come up against that?
No, I haven't.
Ah. Now, do you think you would have done by now, or do you think it might be something that you're going to be coming against soon?
I think the fact that I'm running at such a local level, I don't think that there are huge national party interests working against me. So I think that's probably why.
Okay.
Now, you're right. We see a lot of these establishment Republican candidates challenging people like Justin Amash.
Mm.
And where is that coming from? Why is that happening? Right.
Yeah.
And I think that might play more into some of the Republican interests in Washington, D.C.
Sure. So now it seems like here what we're getting from what you're saying, Bill, is this is the way we do it, right? We liberty people who want to take over and use the Republican Party as a vehicle for liberty. Basically, we get in under the radar by taking those offices that the Republican Party powers that be, the neocon, the old school, that they're just not interested in because they're not, quote, big enough, unquote, right? And if we can take over a state office, that's not a small office. I mean, we're not talking school board here, right? School board, of course, being important. But, you know, you're talking about a state representative. So this is, you know, if you succeed, there is a lot that you're playing for, but not so much that the Republican Party can be bothered or maybe even have the resources or inclination to stop you as a Liberty Republican. So if we can take over the majority or a large chunk of those state positions and lower, then the future maybe of the Republican Party is ours.
I think that's an interesting way to look at it, but I guess the framework or the perspective that I come from is that I want to convince the Republican Party that it is a better idea to hold the views and espouse the ideas that I hold, because those will help you win elections. And I think I think what the Republican Party cares about right now is just getting people elected, because they're not doing a very good job of that.
Right. Yeah, true enough. And especially in our neck of the woods. Now, talk to me, Bill, about a little bit about how the world looks politically to millennials. Like what do millennials see when they look at America? Like, give me a generational perspective.
Well, I think that we saw Bush's presidency, and we saw big government republicanism, and we saw lots of war, and we didn't like it. And so millennials are really turned off by the Republican Party. And then Barack Obama came in, and we were so excited about his presidency, but he didn't deliver on any of the promises he made.
Now, are you saying that as a Republican or a Liberty guy, or can you sit down, you know, in the cafeteria at UW and talk to people with a wide range of political views, including Democrats, and feel the same sense? Do they have that same sense?
I'm talking from the perspective that I hear when I talk to other young people who have joined the Liberty movement.
Okay. Okay, so you're saying that the Liberty movement is obviously benefiting from a reaction to both, well, to what Bush and Obama have in common, basically.
Basically, what's led to the current political climate.
But what about your campus Democrats? How would they respond to that?
Well, I'm not sure. Some of them are very partisan, and I don't know if that's because that's just how they were raised and that's how they grew up, or whether that's their choice. So I can't really speak to that. But I do see that less and less millennials are becoming just purely partisan.
Right. Yeah. Partisanship itself is kind of passe and seen to be ineffective.
Right. Because my generation wants options. You know, when we go to buy a phone, we have so many different carriers to choose from, and there's so many different social media sites that you can use and everything. So people want more choices, and that's what my generation has kind of gotten used to.
Go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, and so when we're only faced with two choices, the Republicans and the Democrats, a lot of people are becoming independent, and they're saying, you know, I'm going to make my own choices. I'm going to vote on the issues that matter to me, but I'm not just going to join someone's team for being on the sake of a team, right?
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Well, this is all cause for hope, I guess. We've got like a quarter of a minute left in this segment. Is there anything else you want to say to what we've been speaking about in this segment, Bill?
Not that I can think of right now.
Okay, well, we're going to come back after this break, and we'll have a 2.5 minute or so close, and I want to give you the opportunity to just tell the listeners, you know, where they can go to support you and your candidacy and what you're doing.
Okay. Thank you.
Republican Radio, speaking to Bill Stinson, a guy one year out of his teenage years, he's decided enough's enough, that you're never too young to really want to make a difference to your country, make a difference for liberty. So, Bill, look, we've got a couple of minutes left here to close the show. If there were 1,000 of your potential constituents listening to this show, what message would you want to share with them?
Well, I would just tell them that, you know, as a 20-year-old millennial Republican, I feel a sense of duty to ensure my generation's economic future. And I think that's possible with the principles of fiscal responsibility, reduced government, and increased personal liberty. And I think that right now, legislators aren't connected enough with their voters, their constituents, the people who put them in office. And I think that what we need to do is use social media to create more of a conversation between the people who are representing you and the voters. And I think that Justin Amash has done a great job with that, but that's something I want to do as well. And so please like my Facebook page, go to my website, BillStinson.com. My Facebook page is just Bill Stinson.
Okay.
And if you'd like to support my campaign and help me get my message out through Facebook, which we're going to be doing through Facebook advertising, there's also a link on the Facebook page for donations.
Okay, very good. So here we have it, a young Republican, a libertarian Republican with a small L, obviously, socially liberal, pro-choice, and, you know, trying to get traction here in a, well, it's in a purple district, but in actually a very blue state. Maybe Bill is the future of the Republican Party. God knows that the future of the Republican Party has to not be what it has been. I think what Bill is doing is really in line with what Rand Paul says the GOP needs to do. That would be fair to say, wouldn't it, Bill?
I think it would.
Okay. Well, look, this is Blue Republican. I'm a supporter of people who love liberty and fight for liberty in any party. And, Bill, I've been very glad to have you on this show. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Robin.